Well, welcome everyone. We're going to do the first live podcast that I have called The Playbook for Entrepreneur, nice. Entrepreneur Magazine. And no better place to start than one of the greatest running backs of all time. No doubt, right?
I don't know about that.
And I'm extremely grateful. I was telling him that I had on my podcast the other day a guy on the NFL Network that works with Reggie, Akbar Biyajabla. And I was so glad that we have Reggie Bush. How easy is that? Welcome, Reggie Bush.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, his last name is hard to pronounce.
Oh, God, your name's so easy. It's amazing. Anyway, we'll get started real early. The idea of the playbook is that instead of asking your typical football questions, which after the podcast, everyone will get an opportunity to ask whatever question you want of Reggie. And he's been kind enough to say nothing's out of bounds, but I'll be aware of that. We'll see.
I've heard it all.
I know you're faster than me. Usually I can run scared faster than most people, but I doubt it. I've seen you turn the corner. I ran a sports agency called Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment.
Yep.
Probably one of the most notable sports agencies. Mm-hmm. And we were recruiting you. Yep. And
yeah, I remember.
It was an amazing thing. Yeah, we were relentless. Reggie, talk about the playbook, because obviously there's a big step when you come out of USC.
Yeah.
And you were the guy. Tell everyone that playbook of how and what it feels like with all the pressure to be coming into that draft as a Heisman Trophy winner, etc.
It was a lot of pressure. I think I did as good of a job as you can possibly do with it, with all the pressure mounting. I think my situation was extremely unique because I got drafted to New Orleans, which was 6 months after Hurricane Katrina. Going into the situation like that where the whole city was devastated and just about everybody within the U.S. was affected somehow, some way by that tragedy. And I never forget, when I got drafted, I flew down there and they took me on a tour of the city and to see the Ninth Ward and all the devastation that happened. And there were still, you could see the line from the level of how high the water went up to some houses. There were spray paint of the numbers of bodies that was found in the houses. And it was pretty much a ghost town, So for me, going into that situation, I don't know if that ever happened again. Let's hope it doesn't. But it was a lot of pressure going into a city that had suffered something like that. And then also going into a team that hadn't won in a long time. There was a lot of pressure, to go in and win right away. And thankfully, I had guys like Drew Brees, Coach Payton, I had some veteran guys who had been in the league for a while, Deuce McAllister, Joe Horn, guys that I looked up to, and it really helped me to transition, into the NFL, into life in the NFL, which is a whole nother story. So it was tough. There was a lot of pressure. But the city, man, the city welcomed me with open arms. I'll never forget the very first restaurant I went to was, you guys know who Emeril Lagasse is? He's a great chef. One of my good friends to this day. And I didn't know who he was. I had never really been in the South. So this was my first introduction into the South, seeing all this, I was blown away. I didn't know what to do or really how to, how to react, because I was filled with, tons of different emotions. I was excited. I was nervous. I was scared. I was confused a little bit as to, how we were going to even play football, in the city. So I remember going back to the story, walking into Chef Emeril's restaurant, and the whole restaurant stood up and applauded. And so for me, that very first introduction into New Orleans really kind of put me at ease, put my emotions, kind of at ease, and really helped me to, to just be motivated on a daily basis to go out there and to hopefully at some point bring a Super Bowl, which is what we did in 2009.
Yeah, that was awesome. And, I teach people everyone should have three mentors at all time in their lives.
Yeah.
And you've been surrounded by, you mentioned some in New Orleans, but before you were drafted, I remember, I was good friends with LT,
mm-hmm.
and LT took you out for a workout.
He did.
And at that time, you were young and a little arrogant with your athletic skills.
I was going into my junior year in college. I just finished my sophomore year, and I was going to be a junior. And so, not to cut you off,
go ahead.
But So I grew up in San Diego, and born and raised, and I got tons of awards every year. LaDainian was always one of the honorary athletes that would show up to these, high school events, which, you know, at the time, you know, I was just excited to be able to meet LaDainian. I grew up there. I was huge fans of guys like him, Junior Seau, you know, watching those guys. But so he would always show up. He was always an honorary, athlete, celebrity athlete to come hand out the awards. And he would always show up every year, every time he would show up, you know. And so that, for me, that spoke volumes because he didn't have to be there. He didn't have to donate his time. I'm sure he was extremely busy. So for him to be there, it really meant a lot to me. So I actually got a chance to meet him when I was, you know, a freshman, sophomore in high school. So yeah. I had known him for a long time. And then the famous workout he's talking about is he basically just kicked my ass. I thought I was in good shape. I thought I was ready. And, you know, he showed me something that I had never seen before. You know, he took it to another level. I'll never forget. You know, he's on, so there was two treadmills next to each other, and this was the end of the workout. I was already dead tired. I was already, you know, just about ready to die. And he's on the treadmill, you know, running full speed, and I'm just like, like I can barely keep up. And, so for me, just to see the work ethic of one of the great ones, of LaDainian Thompson, that really put things in perspective for me and helped me to go on to the next year and to be able to win the Heisman.
So. Yeah, it's one of his favorite stories.
Yeah, I threw up in that workout.
Yeah, you threw up. After dinner. Now Junior was also close to both of us.
Yeah.
And the Seau Foundation had a great influence on you, and Junior did as well. And you're just lucky, unlike me. I played against Junior, so mm-hmm. you were lucky not to, although you might have been faster than he was.
I played against him one year when he was in New England, but he didn't really play, though. He was over there, but I like to tell people I played against him, but I didn't really play.
I was in high school, so it's a little different. It's a lot easier.
Yeah.
Anyway, growing up in San Diego, Alex Smith was your quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
You guys were incredible.
Yeah.
And, another guy that I recruited, and then Matt Leinart, obviously, Castle, you played with all of them.
Yeah.
You know, out of those three guys, who did you think would end up still playing and why?
Well, I thought Matt Leinart would be the one to, be playing the longest just because, I played with him in the college level. I know what he was capable of doing. And I knew he had everything, needed to be a leader, to be a great competitor, to be a great quarterback in the NFL. And obviously it didn't work out that way. And I was a little surprised. I'm still shocked to this day. Matt Castle, who was a backup for us, my whole career in college, I never saw him step foot on the field. Is still in the NFL to this day, which is crazy. But it just goes to show you, man. Just God always. I truly believe there's things that just happen because God has a plan, for everybody in this room. And for example, I truly believe that team that was put together in New Orleans was. That was meant to be. That was truly meant to happen. It was meant to be. And that was a work of God. And that was completely, because I was actually supposed to go to the Houston Texans that year. And they ended up passing up on me and going and picking Mario Williams. But it was every NFL team was so sold that I was going to Houston that nobody else interviewed me. No other team interviewed me. Only team that interviewed me was Houston. They're the only team that brought me in. To the facility to take a tour of the city. I started looking for homes, and then, that happened. So, and if that would have never happened, we might be talking about a different story here, which, I don't know how that would have gone. So.
Yeah, I think, that faith that you have and gratitude that you have, not everything works out for everyone. One of the things I learned as a sports agent, there's a lot of different variables involved. Yeah. And the one thing that I believe in is consistent, persistent mm-hmm. pursuit of your potential. And Lee and I, when we were talking about you, you obviously had all these challenges. I personally think sometimes it's the lessons that you're supposed to learn.
Yeah.
And, we can see in baseball, football, certain guys get pointed out.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, as an agent, your difficult times in college were nothing more than I saw all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And sometimes it's just easier to pick on the best guy.
Of course.
To send a message.
100%, yeah.
Right? And the government does it with taxes. Right? They'll pick on the most prominent guy and say, oh, this guy, insider trading. Why? Because if they can put that in the news, it'll stop everything. Well, what we liked about you is the resiliency of, you know, that gratitude. Even though what other people would call bad luck, you turned it around again and again and again. And, you know, to this day, there's certain guys that I think, you know, your statue should easily be at USC. I'm not getting on a pulpit, but I mean, it's just ridiculous to see O.J. Simpson's jersey in the end zone and not Reggie Bush's statue at USC.
Well, I appreciate that.
Thank you. Especially for what situation occurred.
Yeah.
At that age, though, you're 21 years old, and you have parents, you have Orny, you have all these guys around you, you know, how did you handle that? And still to this day, you have bitter feelings about it.
You know, I truly believe that everything happens for a reason. You know, I feel like there's a learning experience in everything that goes on, you know, in our lives, you know, especially for me anyways. You know, I can't speak for everybody else, but I know for me, a lot of things that happened in my life, you know, I truly believe that they have helped make me stronger to this day for whatever it is that's going to come down the road to be able to handle. So going back to, you know, a lot of things that happened early on, you know, at the college level, there were things that happened to me at the high school level, at the NFL level, all that, you know, and I can sit here and tell you stories all day, you know, about how, you know, I was things that happened at USC with the Heisman Trophy, or whether it was a friend that stole money from me, or, you know, it was an agent or anything. There's so many different stories that I could talk to you about. And I feel like, you know, it's cliche, but what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? And helps you to be able to prepare for whatever it is that's to come, because we never know, you know, what's going to happen to us, you know, today, tomorrow. Nothing is promised, nothing's guaranteed. But, you know, I truly believe that, you know, I'm still here for a reason.
Right on. And I believe that as well. Was there ever a time throughout all the challenges that you faced that you've said, you know what, it's not worth it, I want to quit?
Like football?
Yeah.
No.
That's awesome.
No, yeah. I've never wanted to, I've never had, you know, there was one experience that happened, you know, so going back to when I got drafted, and, you know, again, like I said, I'd never been in the South before, so, or let alone lived there, you know, maybe visited, but it was quick in and out. So when I got drafted to New Orleans, we had training camp in Jackson, Mississippi, and in July, Jackson, Mississippi is like, to me, it was as close as you can get to hell. Like, it was hot.
Still
hot,
is.
Like, the hottest you can possibly imagine is hot.
And humid.
And
it's not San Diego anymore, Dorothy.
No. You're not on the West Coast anymore. So, you know, we had training camp there, and this was before the new CBA agreement, which is coaches could still have two-a-day practices and full pads. They basically try to run you into the ground till you cried uncle. And... you know, for me, that experience, having to go through that, practice twice a day, your body is just completely just depleted, nothing left. And so for me, there was one time where, you know, I really contemplated, like, I don't know if football is really for me, because that training camp was, it killed me. But I stayed in it, I was able to bounce back, and it definitely made me stronger, you know, for the years to come in the NFL. And now, you know, the young guys coming into the league, they don't know what it's like to go through 2-a-days anymore. So,
you know, they got it easy. You're the now, old guy. Man.
Yeah,
it's like, you're such crazy. A young guy. Yeah, now you're crazy. The old guy.
I don't like to say it, but yeah, it's crazy. Now I'm one of the old guys.
Well, it is. You know, my business partner is Warren Moon. And if you could hear him talk about the rule changes.
Oh, my God.
What he used to, they had 3-a-days. Right?
I only had those once, 3-a-days, and I never, ever want to experience that ever again. But yeah, that was 3-a-days are crazy. Like 3 days is like suicide. 2 days is like, okay, we're going to kick your ass, but you'll still be able to live through it. Like 3 days, you're not living through that.
Yeah. Well, you know, football's a brutal game.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of concern about health issues of playing. Right?
Yeah.
I played college football, not to the extent that you did. And, you know, I have a lot of friends in the Hall of Fame that don't let their kids play Pop Warner, even high school football.
Yeah.
For you, is it a concern of yours to let your children, or would you let your children play tackle?
It's definitely
football?
A concern for me, because I know what I went through. I know how rough the game was on my body. You know, I know, you know, all the different hits that I took, whether it was to the head, to the knees, to the chest, shoulders, back, kidneys, whatever it is. You know, those hits, for one, they hurt like hell, but for two is you just never know what are going to be the effects, you know, 10, 20 years down the road. You know, so I've torn my PCL, my left knee. I've torn my medial meniscus. I've torn my LCL. I had microfracture. What else? I've broken my right leg, broken my wrist. I mean, you name it, I've been through it. I don't know how many concussions.
Would you do it again if you had it? Knowing what you know now.
I would 100% do it again.
That's what I like to hear.
Because I was so passionate about the game. I loved it too much. You know, and, you know, listen, at the Pop Warner level, at the high school level, you know, we're still, you know, hitting full speed. And, you know, so you know early on, you know, what the game is about. You know, you learn really quick, whether you watch it on TV or you're a fan of it or whether you've played it, but you know early on what the game is about, you know. So for me, I loved everything about it. You know, I loved everything about the hits, the celebrations, the touchdowns, you know, the you know, getting the crowd fired up, running out with my teammates, the week of practice leading up to games with my teammates, the preparation, everything that goes into it. From a mental and physical standpoint, I loved it, you know. So I would do it again, but I wouldn't be pushing my kids to play it. I want my kids to. They all have to golf for sure.
Yes,
there's a San Diego non-negotiable. Guy. They got to golf in my house.
In esports,
yeah.
Would you encourage them to be an esports champ?
Yeah, you know, esports is taking off, man, and I'm actually starting my own company focused in esports, which we can get to later on, but. But yeah, esports is really growing, it's taking off, and you know, I love it, you know, because I love video games. I've played them my whole life growing up, you know, so, but whatever my kids want to do, I'll be there to support them. You know, I just won't be pushing them towards football. And if they end up wanting to do it, then, you know, I'll make sure that they know everything about this game that comes along with it. You know, it's a grown man's sport,
absolutely.
Period, which I was telling the young guy back there, I don't know where he is, but, you know, it's... The thing that, you know, I've learned and I've been able to see, the thing that separates the great ones from the guys who were in and out of the league, you know, 2-3 years, is it's work ethic, and it's that relentless pursuit to be great. And those are the things that when you show up the first year, right, and you're a rookie, you're all excited to be in the NFL, you know, you can't wait to get to work, you know, but when you get to year 4, 5, 6, when you're kind of setting in and it's like, damn, like I got to go to training camp. I got to, you know, go to practice, you know, after I've just went through a full game of, you know, getting beat up and car accidents, whatever you want to call it. You know, so that's the thing that makes guys great. Guys like Drew Brees, guys that I've had a chance to play with and see the work ethic day in and day out. I mean, this guy would show up, 5:30 in the morning, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. Coaches weren't even in there yet, you know. And I would purposely try to show up early as possible to see if I could beat him into the facility. And he was always already in there watching film. You know what I mean? I would walk past the doors, a go change in the locker room, and he's already in there watching film. So that's the thing that, you know, obviously we see Drew. You see how great he is, you know, on Sundays. But the things that we don't see, that people don't see is, you know, how hard he works, you know, and how much of a competitor that he is, or, you know, how, you know, great of a person he is off the field, you know. So that's the things that, you know, you kind of lose because, you know, people only see us on Sundays, right? And, you know, you don't know that, you know, X, Y, and Z, the other things that fall in between that, that's led up to him to be able to lead his team to the fourth quarter, you know, to be put in position to win the game in the playoffs, even though we lost. You know, I don't want to talk about that game.
Yes. Oh
my God! You know, I'm still hurting from that game. Okay. That was rough.
Speaking of which, what is your favorite moment in playing football? Your favorite game, favorite moment?
I'd say my favorite moment is being able to just host up that Super Bowl trophy. You know, knowing that it took us 4 years to get there. You know, so my first year, we had a lot of success. My rookie year, 2006, we went 10-6. Had the second seed going into the playoffs, all the way up into the NFC Championship game against Chicago Bears, and we lost. So for me, up until that point, I just assumed, oh, this is always going to be like this.
Right.
Like, we're just always going to win. We're always going to be successful. And those next 2 years, I think we went 7-9 and 8-8. And that was a reality check, because before that, I really hadn't lost. I had been successful all throughout college, Little League, high school, up until my rookie year. You know, so I just assumed this is how it was going to be, you know, wherever I was at. It didn't matter. So, you know, I was humbled those next 2 years. And that's what football will do to you. It'll humble you really quick. You know, so being able to host up that Super Bowl trophy and knowing what it meant for the city of New Orleans, for the people, for, you know, everything that they went through from Hurricane Katrina to losing businesses, homes, family members. You know, it was such a special moment that, you know, I don't know, if it'll ever be done again, you know, by any team ever. So we were just very honored to be able to bring that trophy home. I'll never forget, you know, just arriving back in New Orleans, the fans, you know, seeing Bourbon Street, literally just a sea of people for our Super Bowl parade. You know, that's something that's special, because, you know, we were the first team of the organization to win a Super Bowl. So, and a lot of history with that Super Bowl for us.
Yeah, and Mr. Benson gave every single employee a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, that was cool too, man. Really, that was really special. Cool. Yeah, Mr. Benson is a great owner. You know, got a chance to spend a lot of time with him and his wife and his family, and they're really good people.
Excellent. Now, turn it around. What's your least favorite moment in a game?
Yeah.
Or what's your worst game that you played? Share that with us.
Jeez. I've had a few bad games where you know, the things that will really irritate me or really have me just in a bad mood for a week or for a couple of weeks was if I fumbled a football, you know, if I did something that I felt like, you know, affected the team negatively, you know, during a game, which was dropping a pass or missing a block or, you know, just little stuff like that. So I would say my least favorite moment, you know, there's been a couple, was probably I would say it was probably the 2010. We had the number 3 seed going into the playoffs. We were 12-3, I think, or 12-4, something like that. And we had to play against the Seattle Seahawks. And they were 7-9 that year. And I don't know if you guys remember, that was the beast mode game where he broke that run and broke, like, it seemed like 100 tackles. Like, he's still running right now.
Right.
But, you know, that was, you know, I think because everything leading up to the game, we assume, this is going into being humbled, we felt like they had no business being in playoffs. They were 7-9. Their division was extremely weak that year. And we were like, these guys have no business being here. We're going to come in here and just slap them. Like, we're just going to beat the brakes off them. And, you know, we got humbled really quick. From the start of that game to the end, they beat us in every phase, you know. So that was probably one of my least favorite moments to think about.
Speaking of least favorite moments, what advice would you give Marcus Williams after that game?
Yeah. Marcus Williams is the guy who missed the tackle at the end of the Saints game. I'm sure you guys know he's going to be famous for that for a long time now.
But he turned around the defense. Yeah. He's 21 years old. You know, all of that's thrown away because you – put his head down on one tackle.
One play.
And got unlucky, too.
One play.
Right? He got unlucky.
Yeah.
But what advice would you give him?
Yeah.
Because he's under a lot of pressure
now. Stay off social media for sure. Like, don't even go on social media.
Don't press send, right?
Don't go on social media for a while. But, you know, listen, I saw his interviews after the game. He did a great job. He handled it well. I don't know if I've been able to handle it that well as he did in that given that situation. You know, this, you dream of moments like that, right? To be able to have the game-winning play, you know, since you're a little kid, you know, and to be on the other side of it, you know, I'm sure for him, you know, listen, I don't know him personally. I got a chance to meet him recently, and he's played great all season long, which is crazy. Like he's played really well all season. He had an interception in the game as well.
Right.
So, you know, I would say for him, man, just to use it as fuel. You know, use it as fuel to come back bigger, stronger, faster, better the next season. Because, listen, it's already over with. You know, I read something. I don't know how true it is, but I know Saints fans and I know how they are. But it said that, you know, Saints fans, as soon as they landed, everybody was there, you know, to – cheer him on and applaud him as they landed back in New Orleans, and they were all there chanting his name in support. So, That kind of stuff is really what...
it doesn't happen in New York.
Definitely not New York or Philly. It ain't happening over there.
There's an old saying about San Diego, which I loved. We had a big baseball practice as well. And the guys from New York that got traded, the Padres lost the World Series. Uh-huh. And the guy was amazed. I won't say the player's name. He's like, oh, my God, I lost the World Series in New York. Nobody would look at me, right? They would throw batteries at me. He goes, we lost the World Series in San Diego. They threw us a parade. Right? There's the difference between cities like
difference.
San Diego and New Orleans.
Yeah. There's
now,
a difference.
Yeah. Another question. You know, we talked about first in and last out. And I've been blessed to market the Pro Football Hall of Fame, represent Aikman, Moon, Young.
Yeah.
You know, the quarterbacks that we had go endless, at Lee Steinberg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the two most talented quarterbacks we had was Jeff George and Ryan Leaf. Mm-hmm. And all Aikman, Moon, and Young will tell you, those guys could throw the ball, ridiculous. Yeah. But the difference between Hall of Famers are these personality characteristics that go beyond. There's so many talented guys in the league that never make it, are out in 2 years, or out in 10 or 11 years. Yep. But every Hall of Famer has certain characteristics.
Yeah.
What personality characteristics do you have that made you so... Because there's plenty of world-class fast guys.
Yeah.
Right? And I've watched you play football since high school.
Yeah.
But what makes the difference, you think, personality, or and what advice, characteristic-wise, would you give to anybody, not just football, but in life?
Yeah.
Because one of the ones I give is, be the first to show up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how many of those great guys are always the first to show up?
Yeah, I was just talking to my guy back there, and I was telling him that and one of the things I learned very, very early at a young age was that talent is going to get you in a door, but your character is going to keep you in a room. And if you can really understand the meaning behind that, you can apply that to everywhere, anything. I don't care if it's football, if it's the business world, tech world, you know, whether you're a fireman, police officer, whatever it is, that alone, that statement alone has so much power behind it. And, you know, so for me, I was fortunate to be able to be surrounded by great coaches or other, you know, really good players. And so I always wanted to, because at a very early age I knew I was exceptionally talented. But for me, I think I was such a fan of the sport and getting a chance to not only be surrounded by, you know, good coaches and players, but, you know, I really studied the game. I was a student of the game. You know, so I watched guys like Deion Sanders, Barry Sanders, you know, Junior Seau, obviously living in San Diego, you know, that whole Chargers team that had a lot of success, you know, in the mid-90s. And you know, I was also a 49ers fan, so at that time, they're also very good.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, you know, I learned very early at a young age that, you know, listen, I was going to get to the next level no matter what it took to get there. You know, I was going to outwork my opponent. I was going to be relentless in my pursuit to be great. I was going to show up every day. I was going to do the right things, say the right things. Now, you know, I can't say sit here and say I was perfect. You know, obviously, I made mistakes, and I, you know, even to this day, I still make mistakes. But those failures and mistakes have helped me to be successful. You know, I would actually look and point to those failures and those mistakes more than some of the other things to help me to get to where I was, you know, to the next level. You know, I failed a lot, you know, in football, you know, and those are the things that, you know, obviously the famous quote by Michael Jordan is, you know, he's, I don't know how many, however many shots he took, but however many he missed comparing those two. And, and listen, it's true though. It's the failures, are the reasons why I've been successful. You know, and I can truly, honestly, wholeheartedly say that, you know, that's what's got me here. That's what helped me to be great on the football field. That's what helped me to be successful in the business world. And that's what's helped me to, you know, in everything. So I try to apply it to everything, you know, everything in life, you know. So, like, for example, right now, I just started at NFL Network. You know, I haven't signed a contract yet, but.
So you're working for free?
No, I'm not working for free.
I'm sorry, man. I just want to make sure.
but I'm working my way up. You know what I mean? Yep. I just started there this year, and I've been in there, done the shows, you know, for the last 5 years. But now it's official. I'm retired, so I'm going into the next phase of life. and which is going to be, you know, TV broadcasting, you know, analyst stuff. So for me, is I'm applying those same, you know, core values that helped me to be successful on the football field in the, you know, the media, you know. So be the first one in there, show up, work hard. You know, they always ask me to, you know, can you come in these days? I'm basically saying yes to everything, you know. So, you know, just showing up and just the relentless pursuit to just be great on TV and to, you know, be articulate my thoughts well, which isn't always easy. But, you know, so I'm applying all those same things, you know, to the business world, to the TV world, all that stuff.
Yeah, and it does translate over. I know we're going to open it up to questions as we end up the playbook from Entrepreneur here. You know, you've created a great legacy for yourself.
Yeah.
You know,
appreciate
we're all not perfect, but I, you know, what aggravates me most about being an agent is knowing guys like you that are of service. 11 years with St. Jude, created his own birthday foundation to give homeless kids birthday parties around the country.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars donated. Not just in money, mm-hmm. but in time. And, you know, I've surrounded myself with people like you that don't say no.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that you don't need to be here tonight. And, you know, the things that you do and you help so many other people, you know, that to me is what, you know, inspires me to do this show, to let people know, you know what, these guys, it's not easy to be a public figure, especially with social media. And it's real easy to, you know, I always say, and I started doing this about a year ago with Gary Vee, try having a camera following you around every day.
Yeah.
You know, thank God I have the power of what's edited or not on that camera, because my career would be ended. And I think that any career would be ended with the type of scope and scale that's on them today. And, you know, you should be applauded for what you do for others and recognized for it. And if everyone could give Reggie a great round of applause.
Thank you. I think to your point is, you know, one of my favorite actors to follow is Denzel Washington. And, you know, one of the things that he said recently, you know, I'm always looking for new stuff to, you know, new material, whatever it is to, you know, keep me motivated. One of the things that he said that I truly believe is that, you know, we all have our own, we're all talented, we're all artistic in our own way. And when I was telling one of the young guys, where is he, by the way? Because I keep saying young guys.
DJ.
I don't know his name. Where is it?
DJ right
here.
All right,
there you go.
He's in the
DJ.
Draft this year. Great, great DB.
But it's to, you know, there were times in the NFL where, you know, I would turn on ESPN and I would see Adrian Peterson, you know, running guys over. So I would try to go do that the next week. I would try to go do what he did. I would try to go run guys over. But that wasn't me. That wasn't who I was. Now, I could do it. But it wasn't what got me to this point, you know. So I think there's something to be said for when you decide to be yourself, you bring something into this world that can't be replicated by anybody else, because we are all artistic in our own way, shape, or form, and nobody can replicate us 100%. So when you decide to be you, you decide to bring something into this world that's completely different than anybody else, than anything anybody else has brought into this world. And I think that's important. So going back to the point I was making about Denzel Washington, one of the things that he said was that, you know, he's in the service business, in the business of servicing and helping people. And I truly believe that, you know, that's important because, listen, shoes, the money, the cars, the house, you can't take it with you, you know, when you go to the next life. You know, it's not coming with you. You know, you're not going to see a U-Haul truck, you know, going to a funeral. So, you know, it's important to remember that, because a lot of times we forget that. You know, sometimes I forget it, because I remember when I was young, when I first got, you know, my check, you know, I wanted a Ferrari or a Lamborghini, or and I thought that was going to be the thing to make me happy. I thought this was, once I got this, okay, I'm good. You know, now this is, now I don't, you know, I don't need, or I'm not going to want for anything else. You know what I mean? But it was so shallow. You know what I mean? And obviously that's a part of being young. You know, when you're 21 and you know, 22 years old, you know, you think you know it all and you don't.
Exactly.
But, you know, I learned, you know, just, you know, through the years that, you know, none of these materialistic things or none of the stuff that, you know, was here today and gone tomorrow is going to truly make me happy. So finding the things that truly make me happy, helping, giving back. You know, like you said, we work with an organization called the Birthday Party Project, and they go around to, they're actually having one tonight, obviously not going because I'm here, but so they go around to homeless shelters all around the U.S. and they throw birthday parties for homeless kids. Now, if you think about that, birthday parties, you know, for kids are some of the biggest moments of their life. So be able to give them birthday parties is pretty big. Now, another reason I do it is because my mom was raised in a homeless shelter. And she bounced around from different homes. So there's a little bit of significance to it for me. And then also with the St. Jude's thing that I've, you know, I've been part of St. Jude's, you know, now 12, 13 years now. So I just love giving back to kids. You know, I enjoy it because, for one, kids are extremely genuine. They have no filter. They'll ask you anything. But they're also the future, you know what I mean? So I don't believe you can have enough leaders and mentors in this world. So I just try to do my part by making sure I'm doing the things that are going to keep me happy, which is helping other people and giving back and being of service. So
awesome. That's it. Another round of applause. Let's open it up to some questions.
Good job, man. How you doing, brother?
Listen, I got a question.
Yeah.
And a comment / trivia question. So I'll start with that.
Cool.
You were talking with my guest earlier, and we can only think of, for example, you and Mark Sowell, Trojan Rod.
Yeah.
Heisman Trophy winner, National College Championship, two of all.
Yeah.
That group's got to be small. Do you know the people in that group?
That
is a new trivia question. that's a new one for sure because, you know, listen, I know Marcus because we grew up in the same area, you know, so I know that. But as far as, you know, knowing all the three, that's a good question. I would have to look that one up. I would need some time to look that one up.
My question really has to do with Le'Veon Bell, the fact that he's taking on this sort of running back mantle, sort of president of the running back union.
Yeah. Yeah.
I appreciate that, being that he's on several of my friends, he's like you were. Yeah. What do you think about that? Because he's trying to, you know, debunk what's going on with running back in the league and really trying to set a mark for what he believes should be paid.
Well, I think when I first got into the NFL, the running back position was still a very important position as far as, you know, they were considered the workhorses, you know, of the football team. You know, it was obviously just, you know, going back to the days of Emmitt Smith, you know, those guys, Barry Sanders, that era, it was quarterback, and then the running back was like the workhorse of that team, you know, and then everything else came after that. And when I got into the league, it was still like that, and it was before the CBA. But as I got into year 5, 6, 7, is when it started to go downhill because obviously there were a lot of good running backs coming out in college, and we got hurt. You know, running backs get hurt a lot because of we take the bulk of the load because we are the workhorses of the team. So, you know, running backs weren't looked at as durable anymore. And even some of the great ones, you know, guys like Adrian Peterson, you know, I mean, one of my good friends has been hurt a lot, you know, and so because of that, because running backs have been getting hurt a lot over the years, the position has been watered down a little bit. So, you know, guys like Le'Veon Bell, you know, who else is there? Shady, guy I play with up in Buffalo. They're far and few, you know. So it'll be tough for him to get the big contract, to get the big deal because of just the nature of the position. And you don't see running backs getting big contracts anymore. And I don't know how long it will take it to get back to that, but there is a trend that's going in throughout the NFL is where the running back position is very watered down now, and they feel like they can replace you with the next guy, you know, a next hungry, young running back coming out of college. And even if he can only give you 60, 65% of, you know what the – you know, guys like me or Adrian Peterson, if we were the leaders in a group, they're okay with that. They're okay to, you know, say goodbye and to move on to the next young guy because they feel like they can, you know, they'll still be able to get that, you know, that production. They'll be able to still get that production. So it sucks, but
it's a business.
Yeah, it is a business, that's for sure. Yeah.
The first one that I've been thinking about for over a decade, and I've had
Well, going back to that national championship game that we lost, thank you for bringing that up.
Illuminate, Rez. Illuminate.
Listen, that play was something that, listen, Coach Carroll ran a very free environment, you know, and by free I mean that he allowed the players to be able to be as creative as we wanted to be, right? And he actually encouraged us to be extremely competitive, extremely relentless, you know, in our pursuit to be great, you know, to be able to be champions. So, you know, laddering the football was something that we did actually a lot in practice. And it just so happened that the guy that was in there that I was trying to pitch the ball to was the guy who didn't practice it. So I didn't know that, though. When I turned around, whoever the first guy I saw, you know, I was going to pitch it to him. Now, had he caught it, it would have been touchdown. There was nobody by him. Like, so it would have. It's one of those things. Listen, it would have been either the greatest play ever or the worst play ever. And it was the worst play ever. So thank you. And then your second question.
Five hundred yards.
You know, going back to the Fresno State game, I truly just felt like, I was given the opportunity. You know, now going throughout that whole season and throughout my whole career at USC, I always split time with Lindell White. We always split time together. So he would get a lot of the carries. I would get a lot of carries, opportunities, and you know, sometimes that would change depending on the game. But for that game specifically, I was just targeted a lot, and I was given a lot of opportunity. They handed the ball off to me a lot. They threw the ball to me a lot, and you know, so I just made the most of those opportunities. You know, and really, while you're in it, while you're in those games where you're just in the zone, it doesn't feel like anything different than any other game. You know what I mean? It feels very while you're in the moment, it feels just like another game, you know what I mean? And I think for me, you know, obviously now that I look back on it, you know, I think, wow, that was, you know, it was great. That was amazing. But while I'm in it, I'm focused. I'm focused on the next play. I'm focused on the next thing. Because if you guys remember, that game was actually really close. Like, we didn't blow them out. It went down to the wire. So I didn't have time to stop and think about, man, I'm playing great right now. Like, I'm about to set a record. So I had to really just focus on, putting my team in positions to win, you know, and that's all I tried to do, you know. And I remember, it's funny because I actually remember my running back coach coming up to me during that game, and I don't remember at what point, but it must have been towards the end, because he was like, are you all right? You okay? Like, do you realize, like, you know, what you're doing right now? And I was like, what? Like, I didn't understand, you know, at that time, because I felt like, listen, we got to win this football game, because if we don't win this game, then, you know, it was all for nothing. So, and it's more important to me to win the game than it is, to get the stats. You know, I don't care about the stats. I just want to win. That's it.
Once you secure the win, how do you feel about the stats?
Afterwards, we party. No, I'm playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my question is several fold. One, should college athletes be compensated?
Mm-hmm.
Two, if so, which type of athletes?
Yeah.
Sports, and what kind of compensation structure?
Yeah.
Well,
I truly believe college athletes should be paid because, I can't speak for all sports. Obviously, I only play football, but I know at the football level in college, the demand is extremely high. By demand, I mean just the demand on your body. The demand, you know, everything that we do at the NFL level, they're doing at the college level. But they actually have to go to class. They got tests, midterms, essays, all kinds of different things, presentations that they have to prepare for. So I think in a lot of ways it's harder because you have two different really two different full-time jobs that you're trying to handle and you're trying to juggle while you're in college, you know, which is obviously college in itself is tough as it is. So I believe because, listen, players, anytime they step on that football field, you're putting your body at risk. You're putting your livelihood at risk, whether it's at the college level or at the NFL level. So I think because universities will go and sell your likeness, they'll sell your jerseys, they'll make up bobbleheads, books, jerseys, or whatever it is, you know, to get as much money from that player as they can until he's gone. You know, so a lot of universities are making a lot of money off of these kids. But yet the kids are told that all you get is a scholarship, you know. And I listen, the scholarship is great, you know what I mean? I think it's an amazing opportunity to go to college and to be able to learn. But when the university is making money off of you, yeah. Then what? You know what I mean? So as far as the structure of it, you know, I don't know what that would be because how can you tell, you know, how can you tell
What would have been the outrage if Reggie, his senior year, right before the season started, would have said, you know what, I want to change my number to 32. Right. Reebok, right? Imagine what USC, because exactly. Where were all those jerseys? But yet they said that his jersey, but they already ordered millions of number five. Right? So 100%. There's a huge issue. We actually tried with Clarkson to switch Leinart's jersey to make that point, because you know Clarkson's a big proponent, so am I, about paying athletes in college. Yeah. That's your brand.
Yeah, it is.
Right? 100%. And you should get a percentage for that brand just on a marketing deal. And everyone has their own brand.
100%.
And listen, there's no question.
Yeah, again,
even if your name's not on the back, that number's you.
They're going to make money off you. The university is going to sell your likeness, going to sell your brand, you know, while you're there. So, and as far as the structure is, you know, I don't know what it should be, but it's hard to tell, you know, hard to say, listen, the best player on the team, you know, is going to get paid the same amount as, you know, a walk-on, a guy who's not playing. You know what I mean? So I don't know what the structure should be, but that would be obviously the more difficult part to figure out is of how you compensate the athletes.
So my hero, my favorite athlete is Ryan. And you hear a lot about his model mentality. You hear a lot about his drives, what drives him to be successful, what drives him to be great.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of mirror that from my control and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Coming from someone like you, what motivated you to be great? Coming from, being a small kid, going to college, going to
NBA. Yeah.
What motivates you still today to be the best?
Yeah. I'll be 100% honest, growing up, at a very early age, my real dad wasn't in my life as much, and very, very little. I was raised by my mom and my stepdad, and so for me, I didn't. Whenever I would go see my real dad, there were things that I saw that I don't think any kid should see. Growing up, I saw a lot of things from him that really affected me. But on the other side, living at home, raised by my mom, my stepdad. My mom was a police officer. She was in church every Sunday. You know, my stepdad was a security guard. So at an early age, I got a chance to see what I wanted to be or how I wanted to be. And I knew that at a very early age, I didn't want to be like my real dad. So my whole purpose growing up was to make my real dad jealous. And was to be everything that he couldn't be, and that's the 100% honest truth. You know, when I was young, I was very talented, obviously, and got a lot of had a lot of success. But there was that thing that really had an effect on me, and it wasn't football. You know, it was something outside of that. You know, from the home that really motivated me to go out and to be great. And then, obviously, I think the other things that motivated me to just be great was family. I know it's a cliche, but it really is. Like, I always wanted to be able to, buy my mom a house, which I was able to do. I always wanted to be able to take care of my family because we didn't have much growing up. And even some of the more simple things, like I always wanted to have a fresh pair of shoes, you know, because I only had like two or three pair of shoes, you know, growing up. So, you know, just little things like that. But the biggest, motivating factor was that, you know, of my real dad, you know, growing up, which is, something I don't talk about a lot. But, it's funny because it affected me, you know, even growing up. And even it affected me in a lot of ways that I didn't even know it affected me, you know, with relationships, with friends, family members, you know, my personality sometimes affected my relationships with women. So there was things about it that it helped me in a lot of ways, but also in a lot of ways there were some answers that I had to go and seek out, as I grew up, because there were a lot of ways within my character that I didn't understand. And I didn't understand why I was like this or why I would do things this way, why I would handle things this way. You know, so, you know, one thing that, that helped me this was maybe 7, 8 years ago, we sat down and we finally had a conversation. You know, we finally talked, we cried. I got a chance to ask him a lot of questions and got a lot of answers, you know. So for me now growing up and now having been through all of that, you know, I'm going to be the best father I can be to my kids, you know, and make sure I break that chain, you know, that cycle of just, just being there, you know, for my kids, you know what I mean? Just helping them out, make sure that they don't have a need for anything. You know, my daughter, my sons, just making sure that I'm always there for them, because I know what it's like to not have a dad there for you. And I know what it's like to have these questions growing up and trying to find these answers, you know, throughout high school, you know, all the different things that you go through, puberty, you know, relationships with, you know, whoever. That was the biggest thing that motivated me growing up, man, was just trying to be bigger and better than my dad. But now, I appreciate him so much because of the things, the little things that he did give me, and I appreciate those. You know, and I appreciate the fact that we were able to be able to sit down and really have that discussion as men and be able to, you know, seek out those answers. So.